Thank you for listening to the Ablaze Church Sermon Podcast. Our purpose at Ablaze is to love God, love others, follow Jesus, and tell others. If you are looking for a church home in the Tulsa area, we'd love to have you join us for worship on Saturdays at 6:30 p.m. or Sundays at 10:30 a.m. For more information, please visit our website at ablazechurch.org.
Well, this last week we celebrated on July 4th the birth of a nation called the United States of America. But today we are going to be looking at and reviewing the birth, the rebirth of a nation called Israel. And it's now time for Israel to be out of time out. Kind of looking at where this story has been. The people of Israel have been very disobedient, very rebellious against God. They have begun to worship idols and the gods of the surrounding people. And as a result of that, the worship of God has fallen into disuse. People have a mixed kind of a loyalty. Oh, a little bit to God, a little bit to this one, a little bit to that one, a little bit to that one. Men, they are breaking, of course, the very first and the fundamental of all commandments, and that is, you shall have no other gods before me. But they were having other gods. But now it's time to be going back, rebuild, to build again the house of God, and to build their spiritual houses. It is the right time. You got to have the right priorities. You know, time out is a time to think. When our kids were little and was, you know, they had the time out and said, you're going to have to face the wall and sit in the thinking chair for a while. Thinking. Think about what you did. Think about how you're not going to do that again. Think about how you are going to, in the future, do the right thing. And that's what the time out, or we call it the exile of the people of Israel, was all about. They were to learn from history, but sometimes we have difficulty learning from history. There was an individual who was saying that, you know, every time he does something wrong, his wife gets historical. And his friend said, you mean hysterical? He says, no, I mean historical, because she remembers every bad thing I've ever done over the last 10 years. So we need to be learning from history. Okay, so there is an excitement in the air, and the excitement is that we're going home again. We're going back home. Time out is over. It's been a long absence. And the only good thing about being away from home is being able to come back again. But they've been gone so long. As a matter of fact, for some of them, it has been just about 70 years. And that's just about two generations. And now they'd heard about the great land that went flowing with milk and honey and that fantastic temple and the walls of Jerusalem, that it was such a gem in the Middle East there. And boy, they had a longing for that. They wanted to see it. And in Psalm 137, we have a kind of a blues song. It says in Psalm 137, by the waters of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion, and I'm feeling so blue. That's just how it was. And they were eager. They wanted to be getting back again, because exile can be a humiliating kind of an experience, but it was also meant to be a chastening, a cleansing experience. Yeah, time out in the thinking chair to be thinking about reality. Now, when I was a kid and I was put in time out in that thinking chair standing in the corner, I had this fear. Now, I'm making part of this up, of course. But I had this fear that they might forget me and that I would be hearing everybody in, you know, at the dining table having a great time and eating that food and laughing and telling all the stories. We had a fun family, you know, but I was outside of it, and then they might forget me. There were a lot of kids in our family. And, you know, 2 years later, they'd come by and find my skeleton and say, oh, yeah, we did have another one. Yeah, whatever happened to him? Well, you know, but God doesn't forget those that he has put in that time out. And as a matter of fact, God had made a promise 200 years before that through the prophet Isaiah. And this is a totally remarkable thing, because it actually names the Persian king that is going to send them back again. Let me read this to you from Isaiah 44, the 28th verse. The Lord says of Cyrus, that's the name of that Persian king, Cyrus. Now remember, this was written 200 years before that. He is my shepherd, and he shall fulfill all my purpose, saying of Jerusalem, she shall be built, and of the temple, your foundations shall be laid. Let's get a little background on this. Remember King Nebuchadnezzar? He was the one that laid that siege against Jerusalem, leveled the walls, leveled the temple, took those people captive into the land of Babylon, and they were in exile. Now, when Nebuchadnezzar died, his son Belshazzar became the king. Now, things are not going so swift, but he's trying to keep up all the appearances in Jerusalem. And so he puts on a great big feast and invites all the muckety-mucks and everybody. And when they have had plenty to drink and plenty to eat, he says, oh, bring the vessels that we took from Jerusalem, the golden vessels from the temple, bring them out and let's drink out of those. And as soon as he did that, all of a sudden, a hand appeared on the wall and it wrote in characters of Hebrew, mini, mini, tekel, upharsin, meaning you have been weighed in the balance and have been found wanting. They summoned Daniel, the wise man, and he said, hey, king, this is it. You are going to be, your kingdom is going to be taken away from you. And that very night, Belshazzar died, and the Medes and the Persians, their enemies, came and took over the whole empire. That fast, it all went down. Now, Persian king, what's his name? Cyrus. Cyrus. In the very first year of his reign, King Cyrus issued an edict of return for the people of Israel. You can go back. And when you go back, rebuild the temple of your God. And so he sent Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel was in charge of the whole project. Wasn't exactly a king, but he was the guy who was authorized to do this. He is a descendant of David, has kind of a kingly demeanor about him. Now, you can imagine that exuberant joy as they are beginning to come back home. That first wave of 50,000. Next week, we'll hear about the second wave, and we're part of that second wave. Okay, but there they are coming. Isaiah 51, in the 11th verse, it's telling again, way ahead of time, what happened. It says, and the ransomed of the Lord shall return and come to Zion with singing. Everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. Wow, the people must have thought, this is a miracle. Who would have ever thought we'd see something like this in our lifetime? It's actually happening. What had been a trail of tears 70 years ago is now a journey of joy for us. So, heading back home, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to get settled in. Time to get busy, a great time of rebuilding. Well, we got to have a place to live, so let's rebuild our houses. Okay, get settled in. Oh, yeah, a part of the job is rebuild the temple. So let's find where was that location? Things right up here on this mountain. Yeah, the stones would indicate this is probably where it was. And so they start by building the altar in that outer court. And when they did that, they began to offer burnt offerings to the Lord. And that was done by the seventh month of the first day of the seventh month of their return. They made haste. So far, so good. Next, okay, how about the temple? Well, they're going to build the temple. We've got to have foundations. And so Zerubbabel gets the people going. All right, gather up the funding, the building materials. And let's see who's able to be a good craftsman and work on this temple. And on the second month of the second year, the foundation was complete. Now, that calls for a celebration because we're making progress. And so the people came together, and there was a great shout. And it was a responsive kind of a thing. It says, for he is good. For his mercy endures, his steadfast love endures forever toward Israel. And they would say that back and forth, and the shout was so great. But there were some older folks there. Some of them hadn't even gone off to Babylon in exile, and they were quite aged, and they looked at that foundation. And some of them who were older also were brought back from that exile, and they looked at that foundation. And in their minds, they remembered the glorious temple of Solomon. And they began to weep at the same time. The sound of the rejoicing and the sound of the weeping mixed together. And the Bible tells us this, that the sound was heard far away. Joy, yet not a complete joy. Well, we got to get on now with the rebuilding, and you'd expect that now that the work is underway, now that they've had that cornerstone laying ceremony, we got to get right on it and finish the job as soon as we can. But folks, didn't happen. It didn't happen. A couple of reasons. One is that there were enemies of the returnees that just didn't want them to rebuild that temple. There were political pressures. There was maneuvering. There was strong opposition. There was bribery, ridicule, economic pressures, and it had its desired effect because it then got them off task. Off task. Oh, I'm wondering, are we thinking about ways we get off task because of the opposition? They turned their attention then elsewhere, and they were satisfied because, after all, there's the altar. That's what really counts. That's what really counts. God doesn't live in a building, does he? That's what really counts. So that'll be just fine. And they then got involved with what we call procrastination. I'm a little bit of a procrastinator myself, so I looked for a support group. Procrastinators Anonymous. I looked it up, and I wanted to find out when the meeting was, but they said, the meeting has been postponed. All right. Thank you. Okay. Now, there are evil spiritual forces around all of the time that will oppose, that if it's a great work of God, count on it being opposed. Count on something that tempts us to stop, and the building did stop. And the people went back to their own stuff in life. They put their efforts into rebuilding their homes. Now, not a bad thing to do, rebuild your house. Yeah, got to have a place to live after all. But the homes became more and more luxurious, more and more lavish. There's a little description that is given in the Bible of what they did. And while the house of the Lord now is just a pile of rubble and rotting building materials. And 20 years go by with no progress. The people are just all tied up. They're paralyzed by fear and discouragement. They've got their priorities confused. Laziness has begun to set in. And they say to each other, the time isn't right, is it? No, the time's not right, no. And, well, but it is time for a prophet again, isn't it? Okay, God sends two prophets. One is named Zechariah. The other guy's name is Haggai. And he stirs up, the Spirit of the Lord stirs them up to put his word in them. And then Haggai said, is it right that you dwell in your houses of luxury while God's house lies in ruin? Huh? Go figure, guys. As a matter of fact, let's look at Haggai 1:6, where he says, consider your ways. He said, you have planted much, but harvested little. You eat, but never have enough. You drink, but never have your fill. You put on clothes, but are not warm. You earn wages, only to put them in a purse with holes in it. You know what this is? This is a spiritual emptiness. There can be a kind of material prosperity with a spiritual emptiness. There's a spiritual ruin, and spiritually they are sowing what they have been reaping. They haven't been sowing anything, and so they're not reaping any spiritual harvest. And then let's go on to some more of what Haggai says. Well, actually, he is quoting God. God put this word in him. My house lies in ruins while each of you busies himself with his own house. You think they got the priorities right? Well, the consequences of neglecting the things of God can be felt in us. You know what I'm talking about when we neglect it. So how do we fix it? It really comes to be a matter of who's first. So reconsider your priorities. See, they had put themselves first, their own comforts first, their own agendas first, their own possessions first, which seems to be, you know, isn't that kind of a normal thing? Isn't that just what we do? Isn't that what people do? Well, I heard this story about a guy who got his priorities all confused. Now, he was a very wealthy individual, and he wanted to impress everybody. And one of the many days he went to a car dealership and brought home a new car, he has this brand new top-of-the-line BMW, and he's driving toward his friend's house because he wants his friend to see it. He wants to brag about what he's got. And so he arrived by the house. He stopped his car. He opened the door and started to get out. An 18-wheeler, whoom, came along. And the guy said, "Oh, no, my BMW." The door went flying. And the friend said, "Hey, don't worry about the door. Your arm got severed." And he says, "Oh, no, my new Rolex." So his priorities were all confused. Yeah, procrastination, all these kinds of things. Okay, two kinds of buildings that we need to be talking about here. The first is the building of that temple. That's the outward building, which is a context. You know, just like this building, it's a context for worship and for a ministry, place where we get to know God. And the temple itself was actually a visible sign that, hey, we think a lot about our God. Our God is really incredible. We're building the most incredible building that there is in all the world. Wow. Okay, so God is important. It's a picture of salvation. Every aspect, every part told something of the glorious story of the grace of God toward sinners. The picture of salvation. But something is better than building that outward building, and that is the inner building, the inner temple, building the person. Zerubbabel had come to encourage the building of that physical structure, the temple. But God sent another man. His name was Ezra. Ezra was a priest. And Ezra was sent to build the people, which is ultimately the real temple, isn't it? In 2 Corinthians, in the 5th chapter, it says, "We are the temple of the living God." And it's that temple then that Ezra came to encourage the people. Now, the question for us really is this: on what do we put priority? On the material things or on the spiritual structure? Are we getting the foundations laid? Are we putting together the right materials? Are we using our thought, our intellect, our time, and our resources for building the spiritual temple, the inner person, you know, to build that relationship with God? And why would we want to do that? Well, again, I want to refer to what Paul, the apostle, said. And again, in 2 Corinthians, he says, "What is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal." There's an unseen temple, and that is the temple that is inside of you. You know that it's there. God sees that is there, that it's there, that God intends it to be there and for it to be built up, that inner temple. So it's a matter of priority. And I want you to think of four R's real quickly. The first would be to reflect. Now, when we reflect, we cannot help but the second R, which is to repent. And if we are reflecting and repenting, the third thing then is that we reprioritize. And if we're reprioritizing, then we are finally rebuilding. So, okay, when's a good time to do this? When would be a good time? Timing means do it now. You know, just do it, the old Nike thing. People say, "Oh, the time has not yet come." That's what they were saying in Jerusalem. "Oh, it's not a good time right now." Procrastination was their great enemy. Yeah, there were issues that were political, financial, morale. Was that a problem? "Oh, it's a great project. Oh, I think that's a good thing to do, but let's wait for a better time." Right now, we're up to our necks in debt. We're way too busy because we're either too young or too old or too much in the middle, so it's just not working out at the right time. This is the wrong season. You know, I have problems with that sometimes, too. My priorities, problems with procrastination. And I think to myself, you know what? I really want some special, sacred, personal time with God, but I got to get this done, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to do that, and then I'm going to do that. And then when I'm all done with that, then I'm just going to relax and be in the presence of God and enjoy Him. Well, in the meantime, I've gotten so tired, or the time has taken so much. How many of you know it always takes longer to do something than when you think it's going to take? And the devil has a way of multiplying all of that. You know what I'm talking about. Well, that procrastination. Well, the devil was interviewing three interns that had completed that year of internship, and they were ready for their permanent assignment, and he was going to choose one of them to bring his plan to bring about the ruin of humanity. And so the first devil comes up and says, "Oh, Mr. Satan, I got the perfect plan. I'm just going to tell people there's no God." He says, "That is stupid. Everybody knows there's a God. I mean, you can't miss it. You got to be stupid to think there is no God. That won't work." The second one said, "I will tell people there is no hell." He said, "Hey, everybody knows there's a right and a wrong, and that the wrong gets punished. You know, even unbelievers have some kind of a weird idea of karma, so that's not going to work." The third one says, "I'm going to tell people there's no hurry." He got the job. He says, "You are going to be able to ruin humanity with that." Well, what does Paul say, the apostle? He says, 1 Corinthians 6, "Behold, now is the favorable time." When is it? Oh, it's now. "Behold, now is the day of salvation." Well, so as we reflect on all of this, keep in mind, these people were in an exile, weren't they? But you know, they might have forgotten God at times, but God never, ever forgot His people. He didn't say, "Oh, you're in time out, I forgot about you, oh, sorry." He wanted to restore them. That's what the whole thing was. And they were in time out for this single purpose. He wanted them to experience more of His love, more of His salvation, more of what it is that He wants His kids to have. He wanted them to have it all. So that while we were still sinners, that's when Christ died for us. The greater of experiencing more of His love. And so this God is a great rebuilder, desire to restore. Now, God keeps His word. God makes good on His threats. But I'm going to tell you something. The carrying out of the threats of God against sin, you know where that all came down? It came down on Jesus. It came on Him when He went to that cross. You see, that was the punishment that you and I deserved. And it went on Jesus. Wow. I mean, already ahead of time? You mean 2,000 years ago? Yes. That's when it all took place. You mean my sins are already forgiven? Yes. Your sins are forgiven. You mean I can have restoration in my relationship with God as an ongoing experience of my life? Yes, you are able to have that. And then God is passionate about restoring, rebuilding, and restoring us into the image of His Son, Jesus Christ. Well, it's not the restoring of a shattered Jerusalem, of that temple. And next week we'll be talking about the wall. It is the restoration of the shattered image, the broken down temple that resides right in here. But God is busy rebuilding His temple, the temple in your particular individual life. But then He takes it yet a further step. I'm going to read this from 1 Peter. "And as you come to Him, a living stone," that's Jesus, "is that living stone rejected by men, but in the sight of God, chosen and precious, you yourselves," this is plural, like living stones, plural, are being built up. Remember that little structure? Okay, the kids were building something up because it was anchored onto something, rebuilding. You're being built up as a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, to offer sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. Okay, sacrifice through Jesus Christ. In other words, it's the sacrifice of Jesus that we offer up to God. Wow. Your faith lifts up, exalts that sacrifice on the cross. God sees and says, yeah, there, all paid in full. Well, no longer do you have to be in timeout. Come on to the table. Come on. Eat with the family. Oh, well, that's what we're going to do in just a few moments now. Because the restoring God says, I'm going to restore you to my fellowship. I'm restoring you to one another. Oh, maybe you got an issue with someone. Well, so you know what? You're never going to unravel it all, but I can restore. I will do it. I will do it. And so when we come to the table of the Lord, our Lord Jesus is there. His body, his blood, his promise, his salvation. And it's just, it's one of the means by which he has ordained to distribute the benefits and the blessings of what Jesus did for us on the cross and by his resurrection, so that the reality of that, the restoring reality of that, becomes a part of our lives.